Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
Today's guest says, if you want to understand kids, you have to learn to dance. Hello, Mataki Api, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus. I'm Scott Wooster, your Hochoka host. We're glad you've joined our circle for part one of a three-part series called Kid Whispering, Series 2. In Season 1, we enjoyed our first series on the topic, and today we talk with Mark Fredo, who with J.C. Chambers and Matt Merritt wrote the book, The Art of Kid Whispering, Reaching the Inside Kid. Mark is currently revising the text for a new edition. He has more than four decades of experience in services for young people and their families. He provides consultation and training services to public and private organizations worldwide. Mark has been an essential partner to St. Joseph's Indian School for many years. He supports our implementation of Life Space Crisis Intervention, or LSCI, our strengths-based approach to working with behaviors as opportunities for learning and growth. It's a long introduction, but Mark, welcome to Hochoka.
Thank you, Scott.
Really good to have you here. So for those who don't know you, for the viewers who don't know, just give them an idea of who you are and what you do as a person, as a professional.
Well, what I do now is, as you mentioned, training and consulting work with lots of different organizations, public, private, educational, juvenile justice, social services, etc. I came by that, or came to that, by first becoming a teacher counselor. Mm-hmm. I was not intending to do this with my life, and I was working with young people in a residential program, and somehow or another I found purpose. And so I started to do this work and got further education and more training and have been really gifted with some really significant teachers in my life who raised my level of understanding and my ability to reach and teach. And what I found was not so much the work, but the kids. And the kids in that residential program touched my life in ways I never imagined. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go to law school, and I just kept doing this work. And I got more education, got more training, eventually grew into leadership positions in the organization, mm-hmm. built programs, ran programs. And then I left that organization and wasn't sure what to do next. So I just started to do training and consulting work, and never really thinking that it would last as it has.
Right.
But it did.
When you came here the first time, I want to say you were with, and I alluded to it in the introduction, about one of the co-authors of the book, who was J.C. Chambers, who, for my money, came in, and again, I talk about being lit up by kids. J.C. has that same mm-hmm. way of operating, had that same way of operating, and we talked present tense, I think you mentioned the other mm-hmm. day, J.C. has that way of operating, and again, really rejuvenated some of the ways that I look at working with kids, and it's good to hear somebody preach that kind of thing. You had a close relationship with him. You guys worked hand in hand with what you did with the trainings and the book writings. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, you would be what you call a cola, which, you know, you're super friends in mm-hmm. To put it in a Lakota term. But if you don't mind, just a few words on JC, and I invite you to remember him and what he meant to you.
Actually, I keep JC close.
Yeah.
And I do speak about him in the present tense when I'm training or just even thinking about him, because, you know, he still is.
Yeah.
And he is a unique individual, very well-rounded. He had adversity in his young life that, through support, particularly of his grandma, who he talked about, you know, quite a lot, turned that into resiliency, mm-hmm. and was able to grow from that. He and I shared a lot of professional interests. We wrote articles together. We started to talk about writing The Art of Kid Whispering to the point where it sort of became laughable. We would show up year after year at different places and they would say, how's the book? How's the book?
Yeah.
And it was a work in progress
yeah.
for a long time to finish this. So he was a funny guy, you know. He had a really good sense of humor, and he had an infectious laugh. He has a laugh that I remember today. He mm-hmm. also had a look, you know, where he would look over his glasses,
yeah, yeah.
and it was
oh, yeah.
sort of a classic look. Anybody yeah. who knows JC has seen that
yeah.
and can remember that. He was a learner.
Mm-hmm.
He was a learner, and that's among most of my friends who I do this work with. You know, we continue to learn and grow, mm-hmm. and we never think we have arrived. And so working with him and watching him work, I could see the impact that he had, not just on me, but on lots of people around
yeah.
him. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't like
yeah.
Stacy, who
yep.
hasn't been with him, who said this was a high point of learning. So he remains a dear friend, and,
yeah.
and I'm actually keeping him with me as I finish the second edition of The Art of Kid Whispering.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of that voice in your head all the time, I would
well,
think.
Well, fortunately, we started to work on it. So, I have notes. I have conversations, fortunately, that I have notes from.
Mm-hmm.
So, his voice is still there, and yeah. And it's certainly in my head as he laughs at me and looks over his glasses
yeah.
at me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good motivator.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump into the meat of this a little bit. But I want to talk about trauma, and so what trauma is, who might experience it, and how it affects the brain.
Well, first of all, it's an incredibly broad topic.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because people can experience the same events and be affected very differently by it.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what the mitigating factors are. So sometimes a young person will have, take JC for example.
Mm-hmm.
JC came from adversity in his background. There was family turmoil, family strife. He ended up with his grandma. And grandma was a great mitigating factor in his life. She helped keep him grounded and she helped keep him moving. Other kids who don't get that, other kids who don't have that caring, healthy adult who can keep them grounded and work through. Everybody experiences trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma isn't some unique experience in life. Everybody experiences trauma in various ways. So sometimes trauma can be one event,
mm-hmm.
one terrible thing that happened that can affect somebody through their lifetime. And sometimes it's a terrible event through which they live and grow and, you know, move on,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even build on that experience. But other times we have young people that are in our work who've not just experienced a trauma, they experienced trauma in an ongoing way
mm-hmm.
Over time.
Yeah.
So I actually worked with a young person here in South Dakota some years ago, and when we look at this through the lens of what we call adverse childhood experiences, a study that was published, more than 20 years ago, and has been replicated a lot, the long-term effect of adversities and trauma that occur in childhood, of the 10 on that original list, this young person experienced all 10
mm-hmm.
over a 5-year period of his life. And he was in a lot of trouble. As it turns out, he was also quite resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't have a long-term happy ending story for him, only because he was doing well until I lost touch with him because I had no standing in his life after that, after yep. our work was done.
Yep.
So some kids experience trauma and can grow through it because of the kind of ecology in which they live, and some don't. The other thing that we know about trauma is we can't make trauma go away. Once some traumatic event happens or a series of events have happened in the life of a young person, that trauma becomes a part of them. Now, what we can do, the healing of trauma in sort of our layman's terms, the healing of trauma really comes from having successful healthy experiences happening over time. I have a a theory of the healing of trauma, which is that, you know, a kid has to be able to express the trauma. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to talk about it. Now, some kids express trauma behaviorally through acting out, and we can see that there's trouble there. Other times, and even with those kids, there are points in which we can help them begin to express it, to talk about it, to get it outside of them. And then they have a different opportunity to be able to understand it, they understand the implications of it, and to deal with it. And then we have to be able to have an environment in which we don't re-traumatize the kids. Yeah. So they have to be able to express it, and they have to, you know, we have to be mindful and sensitive enough not to re-traumatize kids. And then the last part is they have to have healthy experiences repeated frequently over time, just giving them another context in which to find safety and to grow in more healthy ways. Mm-hmm. So we understand that, you know, understanding the nature of the trauma that kids experience helps us understand what we see and hear from them, mm-hmm. how they react to things, how they respond, what they avoid, mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
The book you wrote with JC begins with a quote from a horse trainer, okay? And you know the quote, but it's, ordinary folks can be great at this, but if you don't have no try in you, and you won't even be ordinary. Can you unpack that for us?
That quote comes from a man named Buck Brannigan. Mm-hmm. And unlike the very famous Monty Roberts, who wrote the book and had stories written about him, Buck Brannigan did similar kind of work. He gentled horses. He helped mm-hmm. train horses. In fact, horse trainers usually say that the problem isn't with the horses. It's with the adults. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of approach they take. Now, JC found Buck Brannigan for us, and he had a whole list of Buckisms that he would sometimes inject into our training. He was really, really fond of that. So I'll try to keep that going a bit as I do the second edition. But what this means, basically, is this is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. This is really the science of interacting, engaging in sensitive ways with another being. In this particular case, horses, it's not that big of a leap to other humans.
Okay.
And it really is about being aware of, sensitive to, and responsive to the needs that are being expressed. And as humans, we have, we supposedly have the innate ability to do that. And, you know, sort of how civilization evolved and how humans stayed alive in the chaos of, you know, the evolving world is being able to take care of each other. And that's really what horse whispering is about. That's really what Buck Brannigan's work is about. It's really about recognizing, understanding, engaging in sensitive ways with the needs of others. And anybody can do this.
You say you use the word decode. And I don't know if you just said that, but you're always decoding behavior. Is that in the sense that you're using it?
Yeah.
And then the word ciphering. Is that your word?
Well, not ciphering. We call it deciphering.
Deciphering,
Deciphering and decoding are probably very similar words in the way we mean them in practice. You know, decoding, which is a word that we use in life-based crisis intervention, and we've somehow morphed it into deciphering in kid mm-hmm. whispering, basically means our ability to look beyond behavior, mm-hmm. to understand what what meaning behavior might have, or what meaning words might have. That mm-hmm. there's more to this mm-hmm. than just hearing. There are different. Actually, the Chinese character for listen. Excuse me. The Chinese character for listen says we listen with one ear, 10 eyes, and one heart. So words are important. We mm-hmm. listen with that one ear. We listen with 10 eyes, which is the part that fascinated me that, you know, I've done more sort of looking into, looking up. It really means to take in the whole communication, to be aware, sort of undivided attention around all the communication that's there. It's incredibly wise. And then one heart is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, can I understand what the experience of this other person is like? So the decoding piece of this is to realize I'm hearing what's being said. I know there's likely to be more to that, and we might be able to understand or question. We typically don't know. You know, years ago, I came to the wisdom that it's less important what I know than what I wonder. And so, you know, Jay and I sort of shared this, that we don't presume that we know stuff because we have lots of experience and lots of education and all that sort of thing. It's every situation is a fresh situation. And we want, so those other things, the body language or the tone of voice, we might say, well, when you said this, I heard you say this, when you said it like this. And then we may talk about a facial expression or the way their body moved or a tone of voice that they had, and it allows us to ask more questions for understanding. That's sort of the big picture of what we mean by decoding or deciphering.
Yeah. Okay, so in this series, we're going to do several of these podcasts, but in this series, we're going to discuss lots of different skills. And I alluded to it again in the header to this about dancing, learning to dance, but you talk about mastering the dance, and that's one of the primary skills. Explain what mastering the dance means.
Well, the dance that we're talking about is the dance that the kid brings to this interaction. So rather than us going in with an agenda and sort of a plan of how this conversation is going to go, our agenda is open. And what we're trying to do is to be attentive and responsive to the way the young person needs to engage. And so sometimes they start off really fast. And other times they're very reticent to share. And so what we have to be able to do is adjust our approach to their needs, join them where they are. You know, it's really important that kids find people like us where they need people like us to be. And I think that's really what's behind mastering the dance. And so we adapt our approach to meet the need, the rhythm, the, you know, the pace, that young persons are willing to share. The reason we believe that you don't have to have a great deal of professional training or multiple degrees or letters after your name is really just learning the essential skills of communication. And that's accessible to everybody. You know, people get intimidated sometimes by the nuances of all this. But, you know, really, if you get trained and supported, you can really learn how to listen well, and that's really the essential skill, is how to listen well enough for a young person to be able to share with us.
Where we want to go by getting in the rhythm and performing this dance is reaching that, what we call the reachable moment, or reachable moment or teachable moment. I believe you call it the reachable moment.
Well, actually, we use both. Okay. Lots of people in this work understand the term and the concept of the teachable moment.
Right.
It's that moment when, you know, sort of teaching and learning come together and aha moments happen. And, you know, and that everybody understands that, and we all like that when those things happen. What Jay and I believe is that the teachable moment is more likely to happen and will be enhanced by having first the reachable moment. And the reachable moment is that point at which in the conversation where the kid decides, this one's okay. This person is okay. So this is somebody I can talk to, somebody I'll be willing. Now again, that doesn't mean they open the book and let us all in. What it means is they're willing to try. It's that reachable moment is when they think we're worthy of their trust. And that's the whole idea of trustworthiness. You know, I don't get to decide if I'm trustworthy. The young person gets to decide if I'm trustworthy, because there's risk.
Right.
You know, we ask kids to do a lot of things that are risk, you know, try new things, to trust people where they may not have had trusting relationships in the past, where that may be the source of their hurt. You know, relational trauma is, you know, a significant part of childhood trauma.
And that's a starting point. That's a great place to get to. But it's all, it's a jumping off place where you can start to talk about things, right? Experiences or whatever they might be. But it's such a big thing to get to that place.
Absolutely. And so it's important to get there. It opens a lot of doors. And again, for me, you know, I tend to tell kids when I'm talking with them, I'm going to ask you lots of questions. I'm going to get all up in your business. I sometimes actually use that phrase.
Yeah.
And you can decide to answer or not answer. You can decide to be done talking when you want to be done talking. So I give them the keys, basically. They mm-hmm. have control of this part of the conversation. Not just their part, but they also have control of my part. Because if they don't want to answer or they want to stop, I have to respect that, and we move on. The beautiful part from my own experience is that rarely happens.
Mm-hmm.
It rarely. Yeah. Sometimes there'll be things a kid's not ready to talk about.
Right.
Rarely do they say, no, I don't want to talk to you, or I'm done talking to you and I don't want to talk to you again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it certainly couldn't happen, but it rarely, if it happens, it rarely happens. So, you know, I think what that tells me is not about my skill. I mean, I've well practiced this, and I certainly have skills in this. What it tells me, though, is about the needs of kids, and how, if we can find our way to where kids need people like us to be, they're willing to be open and take the risk of engaging with somebody who, in my case, they may have never seen before.
Right. And you have to show them very quickly you're non-threatening. I thank you for being in in the studio here at Ho-Choka for
this.
Thanks,
Scott. Very happy to be here.
Awesome. And for the rest of you, you viewers out there, we appreciate you being with us today. Next up, Mark and I will talk about the fact that his dance is, in fact, a costume ball, right?
That's right.
So we thank you all for joining us here in Ho-Choka at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.